Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James with the rejection.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast on Leverage the Chat. I'm your host, Justin Rowe, with my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going today?
Doing great. The Cavs weren't as great on Monday night, but I, like a good grown-up and Cavs blogger, did not watch it.
I really appreciate that, like, 15 seconds into this podcast, I messaged you saying that we're going to commit to the bit of not acknowledging that the Cavs played. You already blew it. But you know what?
I 100% forgot about that.
I got better people to talk to on this line. We got the best dressed man in sports media from Sportsnet, Faisal Khamiza. How are you doing today, buddy?
Yeah, that's good. I don't know if this podcast is going to get any better for me, so I might leave on that note. A good way to be acknowledged.
I will note that the best dress compliment was nice, but being better company than me is not the highest bar.
Well, you know what? We started with one low hurdle, and then there was a higher one, and he cleared both.
Yeah.
So stop badgering our guest.
That's the bar low, right? Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Leave me alone, man.
Yeah, I was like the rhythm hurdle. Like, you had to be better than me, which is like, got you going, got you running. And then the best dressed in sports media was significantly higher, but I think we got there.
But yeah, we definitely appreciate you coming on, Faisal. Friend of the podcast.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Former guest.
Second time. We don't have a lot of repeat guests.
Oh, shoot. Hey, nobody else wanted to do it, so here I am.
Yeah. we normally burn through these relationships right away.
Yeah, we crapped all over Blake Murphy. He won't return our calls anymore. And he's never even been on.
Yeah, he just doesn't like us.
You know what? If Blake doesn't want to come on, that's because you guys did something, because Blake is the man. So I will not slander Blake on this podcast. I will cape for all my Toronto Raptors bloggers and make sure they know that.
Blake is good people. But we do have you on to talk about the second best team in the Eastern Conference behind the Cleveland Cavaliers. The only legitimate threat.
It's so interesting because I kind of agree with you. Anyways, I'm sure we'll get into it.
Oh, we're definitely going to get into some Boston Celtics slander on this podcast because, when you look at the standings, Toronto Raptors, unfortunately, they had a bit of a tough loss tonight. Second night of a back-to-back. Kyle Lowry literally busted his ass for the team in the previous night's game. And this game, Serge Ibaka did what he does best, throw a punch and then wait for the ref to get in the way.
Yeah, I was actually just going to ask if when you said threat, you mean like physical threat of violence.
Yeah, because like I think Serge had a moment where he threw that punch and then realized that James Johnson might be one of the only guys in the NBA that could actually knock him the hell out. And he's like, yeah, no, I'm out. I need a ref here. I need Vance to get in my way here because James Johnson's a scary dude.
James Johnson's a black belt, isn't he?
Yeah, correct.
Correct. I think he's one of the few people in the NBA that is literally about that life. Like, I don't know if there's there's not many people that I would. I think he's on the top of my list of people I would not want to cross when it comes to NBA players.
It's like the kind of dude that you bump into at the bar and like knock his drink and then you look up and you're like, God damn it. He's not going to take this well. You're going to have to really do some talking down.
I do find it interesting, though, like prior to tonight, Toronto and Boston tied in the loss column. That has obviously changed. But when you look in terms of point differential and just the statistics, the Raptors are probably the most well-balanced team in the Eastern Conference right now. They got a top five offense, sixth in defensive rating. They've kind of developed this kind of shell team or like shadow team with all these young guys that have been playing incredibly well off the bench. They kind of had a gamble in letting a lot of guys walk in free agency and letting the young guys play. And that's worked out for them. And I know it's constantly a talking point in Toronto on whether or not this team gets enough attention. Faisal, when you look at this year's Raptors, what's kind of the prevailing sentiment, at least at the halfway point of the season?
Well, I think because for the last couple of years, we've seen this team improve steadily in the regular season, only to flame out magically in the playoff at the hands of the Cleveland Cavaliers, whether it's the conference finals or the conference semifinals like last year. And I think people for coming into this season were like, maybe we'll just like leave them alone this regular season and just wait till the playoffs, because we know what they can do. We knew what they were able to do. It was just a matter of what they did come postseason time. Well, this team has now made you want to watch them again in this regular season and given you more hope to kind of hold on to, because they've been so fun to watch. And I don't know the last time I could say that about a Raptors team. Like, they've been good over the last 3 or 4 seasons, but they haven't necessarily been entertaining. And so now they're good and they're captivating, they're fun. And for all the talk over the last couple of years about actually reinventing the offense and the culture, and when people, you know, saw Dwayne Casey was coming back for another year, they're like, oh, there's no way, it's all just talk again, there's nothing going to change. Well, things have actually changed now, and a lot of it is because of, like what you guys said, throwing these young guys in, getting their energy and getting their kind of hunger in there as well. And a loss like the one against Miami, you'll see that when you play a lot of first and second year guys to close out your game. And that's what they kind of did, you know, a couple mental mistakes on the rotations there. But, you know, you kind of roll with that with how good they've been this year. And there's kind of a glimmer of hope into the future when guys like Carl and DeMar actually do move on, that you do have some pieces that are kind of established and good enough to maybe keep you competitive after that as well. So I guess the prevailing sentiment is that, oh, God, they've kind of sucked us back in. Now, don't break our hearts again, please.
Now, I guess, like, here's my question. This was just something I was thinking about, because I did see, like, I think it was William Liu who wrote this, like, incredible retrospective after last year's series, where it was just, like, it was kind of like this kind of beaten down, like, you know, like, the Raptors and Raptors fans have spent all this time, like, theorizing and fantasizing about how they could win, and then they just get swept again. And it kind of, like, had this air of, like, letting go in a lot of ways, like, letting go of that obsession. And, like, yeah. I wonder how much of that, like, is permeating the season. Is, like, is there a sense of just appreciating the season for what it is, even if the Raptors don't beat the Cavs in the playoffs? Like, is that the only way to, like, make it a good season in the fan base? Because I feel like there's a different energy this year.
Well, I think that fan base is over that now. I think they're over the idea of that, oh, like, okay, good, you've captivated our hearts, and now you lost. It's okay, we still love you. No, we've had that for the last, like, 3 seasons in Toronto now. You know, it's enough. It's like, show us what you can actually do. Like, why are we still committing to this? And, again, to their credit, the Raptors' credit, they've come and brought something different to the table now. And it's no longer just a good fairy tale to, like, get there and then lose to Goliath. And I don't know who was the strong one. Was it David or Goliath? I actually have no idea. But you know, to lose to that monster... But, you know, so I think the sentiment's changed. I think the attention of a fan base is because there's a belief that they're good, and there's a belief that they could beat Cleveland. Like, Cleveland's losing by 40 points to Minnesota, and the Raptors are trucking along and beating everybody they need to beat and losing tough games on back-to-back. Yeah, but this is a telling month for them, isn't it? Like, January is going to be really, really interesting, because Cleveland, Golden State, Philadelphia, Detroit, San Antonio, Minnesota, all those teams are good. All those teams are good. And the Raptors have one of the best records against teams under 500. That's fine. You're supposed to be good. You're a good team against, you know, the trash team. So now this is the month to kind of prove what you've actually established. And I'll say this, you know, every fan base is fickle, but in Toronto, they're ready to turn on you, you know, as soon as they see change in the negative way. If Toronto comes out of this month, you know, with a negative record and, you know, on a downward trend, I feel like we're going to hear, oh, same old Raptors again. And it might not be fair, but it's kind of deserved given how the Raptors have kind of played themselves in the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Go ahead.
It's interesting because they kind of have fallen into the same narrative that the Clippers and even the Houston Rockets, to a lesser extent, get, that it's, okay, we've seen these teams be really good in the regular season over and over again, and the stars just haven't got it done in the same way in the playoffs. Tom Haberstroh, I don't know. Can we call a friend of the podcast? Leverage the chat.
Friend of
coworker. Friend of the network. he likes to say whenever the Raptors are brought up, are we doing this again? And to me, it's an interesting conversation, because if the bar is beating the Cleveland Cavaliers, that's one thing. But to me, I think what would help kind of turn perceptions with this team around is just like a strong playoff appearance. Like even in the year that they went to the conference finals, it was ugly going to game seven against the Pacers. They won game seven against the Heat convincingly, but the rest of that series was just
never gotten there though. You know, in both those series, it should never have gone to seven games. They were clearly better than those teams when they played to their abilities. Right. And
exactly.
And much like last year too, like against Milwaukee, like, Milwaukee is good, but they're not great. You know, like Giannis is good, but they just let him beat him up and down the court. And it was so frustrating to watch because it turned into this two-man ISO game. And I feel like this year is different because they have pieces that have proven they can be counted on. And I'm talking about, I'm not even talking about like the veterans like Ibaka and JV, but I'm talking about like OG, who's been like a revelation as a rookie. I'm talking about guys like DeLon Wright, who after an injury has come back and proven that he can kind of carry a bulk of that load while needed. Fred VanVleet's been unbelievable. Even Bebe and Jakob Poeltl in the big man role have been okay. Norman Powell has been disappointing, needless to say. He needs like his batteries changed or needs to be restarted or something because, you know.
What do you think the difference is? Is it just the jumpers abandon him and he's just not as confident? Like, I mean, is it the changing roles?
I don't know if the roles per se, because they gave him the keys, man. They're like, Norm, you're starting. This is you. Let's go, you know? And the confidence has kind of been gone. He looks shook when he's out there. And even against Miami, there were a couple plays on both ends near the end of that game before DeRozan gave them the lead that Norm had an open layup. He had an open three and missed both of those and got beat defensively to give Miami back the lead. And I don't know what it is, man. There used to be such a confidence when Norm was driving into the lane that he was going to figure out a way to get something out of that. But now when he's driving, I'm just scared that the ball's going to get lost or the shot's going to look bad because it is, it's not comfortable. It's watching him play. I wish I had a better reason as to why.
I mean, they are like insulated from not needing him as much as you'd think they would. Just 100%. Because, I mean, 100%. VanVleet, as a member of the VanVleet hive, after watching him in summer league a couple times, I just decided he was good, even though there was not a ton of evidence early on. But
he's good now.
But VanVleet's very good. Daylon has the ability to – he can play the two, which I think is, like, mm-hmm. at least on defense, which is super helpful. Then you have former Cavalier legend C.J. Miles on the wing. Mm-hmm. So you are insulated in a lot of ways. Though, obviously, your margin for error – yeah, but your margin for error from a contract perspective, and, you know, this is going to be a team that's struggling up against the tax, like – he does need to figure it out, just if not, so he's not destroying their cap sheet when they don't have that much flexibility there.
No, I agree with that. Masai is generally good at balancing and figuring things out. I think there's a big trust in Masai in Toronto amongst the fan base, and it's been deserved, I guess.
I would agree. I think he's kind of... Yeah. He's earned the benefit of the doubt, and considering where they've drafted from, I mean, Yak was kind of the exception where he was a top 10 pick, but...
But he was 10th, right? Or 9th?
Yeah, 9th. Ninth,
high, ninth, high, yeah.
And
that's
like,
something Justin and I were just arguing about the value of a late...
Exactly.
Like a mid-first rounder.
We don't have to stress about the Brooklyn pick falling too low. We'll get the next Donovan Mitchell. No worries.
Yeah, no problem. Super easy. That's how it always works.
Yeah, I'm not stressed at all, especially with the Cavs drafting record. They'll figure things out. But Faisal, what would you consider a successful season for the Raptors? Because I guess that's the interesting question of what is the bar? Is it kind of, as I was suggesting earlier, that like just look competitive or...
No. I think we're beyond that, right? I think we're beyond the fallacy of looking good. I think you just got to be good now, you know. I think you've got to be good because, look, if you're not going to be competitive and actually beat these teams, what in the world is the point of committing all this money to DeMar and Kyle and Serge right now, you know? Which, you know, you can try to tank and get some picks and move on and start again, right? They got to beat these teams. They got to beat Cleveland. They got to beat Boston. And I feel like the East is set up to be competitive this year, I think. To your boys and their defensive lack and they're like hard to watch defensively. It's like almost scary to see the drop off. And so I don't think there's an excuse anymore for Toronto to be like, oh, play hard and lose in like six. You know, no, like you got to win. And I'm not saying win the championship, I'm saying, like, get to the Eastern Conference Final again, and then you can be competitive, you know, then be competitive and let's see what happens. But
right.
give it a good series, you know, because even the six games against Cleveland 2 years ago, we know how much of a facade that was, right?
Oh.
Like, Cleveland won.
Bismack Biyombo doesn't know what a facade that was.
Did you hear Bruce Arthur on the Low Post sharing his anecdote there about talking to Louis Scola before game six?
No, I don't remember that.
I think I missed that.
Oh, it was so good. He was like, well, the home team has won every game in the series so far. How do you feel about it? And Luis is like, he just kind of let out like a deep sigh and was like, they were not taking us seriously. Then he looked up at the scoreboard and said, tonight will be tough.
and that was game five. And I remember I was in Cleveland for that game. And I was so jacked to like be there and see the Raptors like, give Cleveland everything they have at home, and my God, it was done in the first 5 minutes, man. Five minutes into that game, I was like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah. Luis Scola is like a veteran who's seen too many wars.
Yeah,
he's it's dark.
Yeah, yeah. Each strand of hair tells a story on Luis Scola.
Shout out to Luis Scola, man.
He's like a tree trunk. Like how many rings? Yeah. Oh my God. One thing that I do think is interesting about the Raptors, and like it's so reductive because like you do want to think it's all about scheming and all these different like intricacies of the game. It does feel like the Cavs' defensive game plan more often than not in the playoffs is, hey, we're not going to guard you guys who are shaky shooters, and we're just going to bet that they don't make them. And the Raptors do have a lot of guys like that, you know, like
yep.
Ibaka is not a knockdown shooter. DeLon Wright, DeRozan, Powell, like they have guys who can shoot, and especially DeRozan has been shooting much better than usual. I mean, do you think that's just the difference again, or do you have any more confidence in their ability to hit the open shots that the Cavs scheme is giving them?
Yeah, no, so that's the difference, right? Like, are you going to hit your open shots? And we've heard all the talk about DeRozan now, like on Woj's pod, saying, you know, I woke up early every day this offseason to work on this, and it's paying off. It's paying off this regular season, right? And I feel like that's kind of infectious on everyone else as well. And having a guy like CJ help stretch the floor means you can't really leave everybody as open as you could. And I think just his presence alone makes me feel a little bit more comfortable in saying that, you know, they're going to be better at that this year. And but, you know, again, you're relying on first and second year players mostly, right? Like OG and Pascal and Norm and Fred VanVleet to lift your offense when DeMar and Kyle and Ibaka don't have it going. And again, that's always a tough prospect. And that's part of the reason I'm a little worried about Boston as well. But and I think we all know why.
Oh.
Their team, beyond their, you know, couple guys, they're still young and inconsistent, right? And it's similar to what the Raptors have. It's a similar issue to what the Raptors are facing. Mm-hmm. And so, again, that's when all the talk has got to go, man. Like, everything you're showing in the regular season has to kind of translate in the playoffs. I know it's not the same, and I know no one's going to say Cleveland's going to get blown up by 40 in the playoffs. No, that's not going to happen, but your offensive tendencies have to kind of be the same. If you can shoot, you got to shoot in the playoffs. You can't shy away. That's how you get blown out.
See, when you said you were worried about Boston, I thought you meant like in a series, but you're right. Like, the outside of their two top guys, like their number three and four guys are still very young. They're way ahead of the curve in the regular season, but I don't know how that holds up in a series, especially when Al Horford kind of turns into a pumpkin in the playoffs.
Yeah, Al Horford's the JV of the Boston Celtics, you know? I don't know who that's a compliment.
That's a harsh thing to say about Al Horford.
I know. You know, I know it is. You're right. I'm probably being too harsh. And I actually like Al Horford. He's not bad. But again, like, Jaylen Brown, good players, right? But the thing with these first, second-year guys is can they sustain it over the course of a season? And for some reason, people are generally ignoring that on the Boston side right now, and they think whatever they see is what they've got. Yeah, you can give credit to, you know, Brad Stevens. He's a very good coach. I'm not going to dispute that in any capacity, right? He's a very, very good coach. But sometimes your players give you what your players give you. And so they're great right now. You know, Jaylen Brown's, they didn't play very well in the playoffs last year, Boston, right? They were lucky to get by. To get by Washington. And good second round, and then the Cleveland series. You know, like
they had a scary moment against a Chicago team that had almost no business being in the playoffs.
Exactly,
that was so bad.
And so I don't know. I mean, I know why. People tend to ignore their flaws over the last couple of years just because they're the Celtics and Brad Stevens coaches them and they got Kyrie again and they look good. But if you look really at the teams that they've won some close games against some bad teams, man. Some close games against some bad teams that should if you're a good team, you got to dominate those teams, right? And so I'm a little down on Boston being this good. And so I'm still more scared of Cleveland than I am of Boston, just simply because LeBron James is more threatening than anybody on this Boston team, and him alone can change the course of a series, you know?
I'm a little disappointed that it's probably looking like it's going to shake out where Boston or Toronto gets the one seed and the Cavs are the three or the two, because I really would have liked to see Boston and Toronto play each other in the playoffs.
Me too. But you know, tell your boy.
And that would have been a great measuring stick for the Raptors, because like in a lot of ways it is kind of unfair to say go beat LeBron James.
Yeah.
Like if that's your bar, that's a little unfair. Even if the Cavs are vulnerable, or you know, maybe even they're more vulnerable than they've ever been, that's still like a tough ask. Whereas like I think it would be I think in Toronto and internally in Toronto, they will expect to beat the Celtics. Just mm-hmm. the way from an organizational mindset.
And they should.
Yeah, and I think for a lot of reasons they should, especially if they can get home court. But, you know, I do think it's just going to be like it's a little bit of a bummer. And I wonder how desperately these two teams are going to play for the one seed to avoid the Cavs.
I think the funniest scenario would be like if Boston drops to like the three and has to play Milwaukee in the first round, because then you might get Boston not even making out of the first. Trouble.
And then
they're not dropping at three, Justin.
They might. They're going through a hot streak, and their offense is still 15th. Like, I'm clearly biased. I like bucket getters, but I just don't think a team that can't really score that well does good in the playoffs. Like, I think when the game slows down, that's going to help out the Cavs defense because they give up just a ridiculous amount of buckets in transition. So that goes away. But I mean, if you're having trouble scoring in a faster paced regular season, that's not going to work. And it's not going to work out for you when Horford drops off and the game slows down.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's always been the thing. Maybe we talked about it on a couple pods ago, where the Celtics are the kind of team that their offense really hurts from advanced scouting. Like when you're actually paying attention and you're really scouting them, I think their offense looks a lot uglier than it is in the regular season. And it's looked that way the last couple of years. Like, they are a lot easier to guard because, I mean, we even saw this with the Warriors, who had one of the greatest offenses of all time. When you know what sets that the other team is running, mm-hmm. and you're actively dedicated to blowing them up and funneling shots to guys they don't want to funnel shots to, it makes a difference. And that's why bucket getters matter. That's why Kevin Durant matters. He doesn't help the Golden State offense flow that much better. It was already flowing beautifully at its best. It's that he takes them through. ISO scorers take you through lean times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Celtics, sure, they've got a good ISO scorer in Kyrie and a budding good ISO scorer in Tatum. But I do think the offense isn't great right now. And it's about as pretty as it's going to get. When guys are still flying at Marcus Smart pump fakes.
Yeah. And again, like, they're beating the teams they need to beat, and they're barely doing it. And they have some good wins under their belt. They come back against Houston, I admit, you know, I didn't see that coming. But we saw
neither did Harden
at the end of that game as well. Yeah. But again, like, it kind of makes it fun, right? Like, I think Boston being good is good for the league as well, just because they get this weird respect from everybody just because of their history. And it's fun seeing them get humbled, and I'm like pretty confident they're going to get humbled. You know, whether it's from Toronto or Cleveland, I'm quite confident that it's going to happen, just because I don't buy into what I've seen this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is what we were hoping for. We needed more Boston slander on the podcast. Our listeners have been asking.
Let me Boston slander you. I went on TV in the midst of what is it? They won what, 16 games in a row?
16.
And I said, you know what? I said, that's not impressive. And I got, like, yelled at. And I was like, how can you say 16 wins is not impressive? I'm like, well, look at who the hell they're beating and how the hell they're beating them. It's like, it's good that you win 16 games in a row. I'm not undermining winning that, you know, that many games. But, like,
yeah.
You know, it's like, you're going down to the buzzer against Atlanta and Dallas and the Nets when they were still bad. And, like, you know, like, good, you're winning these games, but just get them done before the fourth quarter. Oh, Kyrie's fourth quarter numbers are amazing. Yeah, it's because you're losing to Atlanta, and you need to win the damn game, you know? Like, yeah.
What's up, Chase Down listeners? Did you know that your chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why Draft is my favorite fantasy site. No more getting crushed by the pros. And it's not just me. More than 1 million people have already downloaded Draft. Play in a real live NBA Draft right now and be done in under 5 minutes. It goes really quick. You can customize how many players you're playing against, as well as what the stakes are. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into Real Money Draft when you make your first deposit, but you have to use our promo code, THECHASEDOWN. That's right, play in a Real Money Draft for free just by using promo code, THECHASEDOWN. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it that they're even giving a money-back guarantee to Chasedown listeners of up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and come play for free right now with promo code, THECHASEDOWN. Do you think the Raptors need to make a trade? Like, do you think that they should be buyers at the market, kind of stay put and, like, just continue investing and developing these young guys? Because, like, the question of Jonas Valanciunas and his role on this team has kind of been one of the more interesting things with the Raptors. He never seems to truly fit in. Like, I feel like they have the potential to be this really exciting team if they, like, commit to Ibaka at the five with OG and, like, even CJ Miles at the three, and then you can go bigger if you need to with Yak off the bench. Like, do you see the Raptors being buyers at the deadline?
I actually don't. I actually think that there's a pleasant surprise amongst what they've gotten amongst their kids. And we know Masai likes to give those kids a chance, and he hates trading picks. I think internally he was, like, boiled at the fact that he had to give up a couple seconds to get PJ Tucker last year, and it didn't work out because he admires assets. He's really priding himself on how he picks in the draft, and everyone can rip the picks to start, and we see in a couple of years that they're not bad. And so I don't think he's going to give up any of the young guys or picks to try to solidify what the team has, because I think there's a trust that this team might have what it takes to get at least get through this East, you know, and then the rest is gravy. Then I think the rest is gravy, but I don't see him making the same thing he did last year, because I think that was it. They have a full year of Ibaka now. They have all these kids. They did the CJ trade in the offseason, or the signing trade with Corey or whatever semantics were for that. But I think this is it. I think this is what we're going to see. Maybe you pick up a depth guy, maybe, but I don't think they're going to swing for the fences and really try to trade, good young assets to try to get help in the short term. I just don't see that as Masai's way of doing it.
So DeAndre Jordan's not going to be a Toronto Raptor.
And I don't think he should.
I don't see why they don't take a swing on Marc Gasol.
Hey, back off. He's mine.
I
think he'd be perfect. Am I crazy? I don't know. Obviously, he doesn't quite fit the timeline of your young guys, but he does fit along with DeRozan and Kyle.
Yeah. I agree. And that's the guy that people have been hammering for, I mean, for a couple of years, you know, ever since turmoil and Memphis started. Like, Memphis always surprised me as better than they should, but this year they actually finally stink again, as expected. And so maybe Marc Gasol fits, but he hasn't been that great either, you know? Like,
no, he hasn't
really had the most outstanding year. It's not the Marc Gasol of old. He's definitely not the NBA Defensive Player of the Year Marc Gasol from, like, 2013, 2014, right? So I think, you know, again, he'd have to give up some young assets, maybe even a pick to get Gasol, almost definitely a pick to get him. And I don't see Masai seeing the upgrade between Gasol and JV not substantial enough to beat Cleveland. If you're worried about what your big man is doing, I feel like you got other problems, you know, because it's just not the way of the NBA right now, you know?
Mm-hmm. Plus, Gasol is definitely saving himself for playing alongside LeBron in June.
Yeah, that Brooklyn pick, right? Is that the talk?
Well, I mean, I've...
It's Gustin's talk.
I'm speaking it into existence. I'm all aboard on adding Marc Gasol, and I'm pretty sure Carter did that just to bother me, as he often does.
I did it with a smile on my face as I asked the question. And anyway, we're still getting Paul George. Don't give up the dream. Soon.
Excellent.
Soon.
I like how we've like devolved into Lakers fans. At least we don't waste our time photoshopping jerseys. We just like quote tweets with Soon.
Listen, it's gonna happen. Basil, you'll appreciate this. I made a tweet about like pulling out a defibrillator to like revive our OKC or our Paul George to Cleveland hopes in response to OKC losing at home to Portland without Dame Lillard. And a defibrillator company liked my tweet about it, but then followed Justin.
Ah, yes.
What? I'm like, Justin,
they know where to go. They know how to get to love. You mm-hmm. know, you're good for putting the ideas out there. Justin's got the endorsements written all over. Justin will pay for that endorsement money to promote the defibrillator company just because.
Oh, absolutely. And if your life is on the line, trust this UK defibrillator company. Use promo code the chase down.
You got to do it. But as I said before we started recording, that if things are looking a little tight, don't worry about us. Just get the defibrillator. And that's the defibshop.co.uk for all your heart needs. Oh, and their bio says they're pretty awesome.
Well, I feel like I don't trust pretty awesome. I want like very awesome.
I want awesome not to be on the bio of a defibrillator company.
I don't want a word prefacing awesome. Just be awesome or just don't say anything. Don't quantify your awesome by saying, like, oh, we're, like, kind of good, you know? No, no, no. I need you to be the best if I'm going to rely on your defibrillating services.
You only get the awesome one if you use our promo code.
I think defibrillating is too serious of an endeavor to use slang. Like, you don't, like, sorry, want your doctor to come, like, this surgery is going to be cool, man. I you want to take it a little more serious.
I really hope they like tweet a lot of memes and stuff.
I gotta find these guys. I'm gonna make that my mission after this is done to find these guys.
Defibrillator is a hard word to say. I think you want to add an extra R in there somewhere.
I think I made it a verb. Defibrillating. I don't think that's obviously that's not. I don't think that's a word, right?
So I think they just call it shocking. Earlier.
When I tried to spell it earlier for the tweet, I spelled it wrong, and then it auto-corrected to defibrillation.
So I think it's a verb. I think this is a very good account. Like, recently they just tweeted, a study finds that sex can be a rare trigger for sudden cardiac arrest.
What?
if you're having awesome sex, use this awesome defibrillator.
have it bedside at all times, especially if you're really good at sex. See what I'm doing there?
I find my girl only gets in the mood if I pull out a defibrillator.
I think she knows she's in for an interesting night.
Where are we going here? Interesting. This is actually what I expected to happen. This is amazing.
this is Eastern Conference talk.
Which, like, come on, we're not talking Wolves Cavs. It is interesting though, when you do look at the East, to actually get on topic.
Mm-hmm.
Is it better than the West right now?
Oh, I love that we do this every year.
Is it
though? This is an every year question, eh?
Hashtag weak West.
Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not, right? Like,
I find it's deep. It's deeper and more interesting.
Yeah, it's deeper. I don't know if that certainly makes it better, right?
No, I think the top heavy nature of the West still makes it better. But
right,
and that's why too. I agree. But it's fun. Look, we're at a point where we got both standings kind of balanced out. We're not looking at the yet at least the 500 team or under 500 team sneaking in either way, and it's competitive, man, and I think that's all you ask for. Like, both your sides are competitive. Like, Indiana's a good surprise. The Knicks are, you know, right there as well, and that helps increase the kind of interest in your conference, right? But I still think, I mean, Golden State's across the league, and them alone, they're swaying the average to the West, and Houston, when healthy, is probably the second best team in the league. So,
West has a lot of injuries right? Out West.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right, and that's what those playoffs are going to be. Those playoffs are going to be fun, I think, unless you're stuck playing the Warriors. But
you mean like the Thunder are going to be fun when they fall to the eighth seed?
They really gave up 20 points to Shabazz Napier, right? Like, I don't know, man.
I don't know. There's still something a little off about them. They're a game. Yeah. They're only three games ahead of the Clippers, who are the 9th seed in the West right now. They are not fixed just yet. Though their schedule coming up is pretty easy, so I think it's going to be, I think either way, they're going to look fine, but I do think they still have some weird issues. And something I was actually interested in the Raptors, and I didn't get to, but I kind of wanted to circle around, because we have kind of seen them change the way they've played this year, right? Like they're moving the ball a little bit better, they're cutting a little more. Do you trust that that's going to be the norm when things get tight, or do you think they're going to revert back to what they're comfortable with?
Yeah, no, and I think that's the million-dollar question. Like, I think they have to rely on this. They have to know that this is the way in which to do things now, because you can't rely on your ISO anymore, because, like, how? Like, how, you've seen it fail. You've seen it fail time and time again, you know? And, like, how can you just think that that's the way to go? So I feel like things are going to be different, although, you know, who the hell am I to know? Like, last year they were last in the league in assists. This year, they're sitting like what, 11th or 12th, I think. Like, they're definitely more fun. Like I said, they're more fun to watch, and that's why
definitely very fun backing, to watch.
People are backing on this team because just how fun they are, and you gotta go with that style if you're gonna try to beat these guys later. Because look, if teams are banking on shutting down your all stars, and your all stars are banking on playing ISO ball, not a good formula. Not the math just isn't that up there. So you gotta trust the other guys, and I think that's why they're using this regular season to work out these kinks and figure that out and trust these young guys in roles they generally didn't do under Dwayne Casey. So, again, it's been different. The culture has been noticeably different around this Raptors team. And so I think they know that this is the way to go. They've seen too many playoff flameouts in the last couple of years to rely on what hasn't worked, I guess.
Right. Yeah, the ball's definitely moving better. And kind of to what Carter said earlier about the Celtics being an easy team to game plan offensively applies to how the Raptors had played in the past, because they really relied on Lowry and DeRozan to create for everybody. And when they'd run into the Cavs would just blitz them and trap them every single time. And then you had guys that weren't used to making decisions, like Serge Ibaka being like, okay, we're giving up an open 20-foot shot to you every single time, but you're not creating for anybody else. You're hitting those at an okay clip, and the offense kind of falls apart. So to see them...
Super okay with a 20-footer from Serge Ibaka.
Yeah, super exactly. Okay. So, like, you're seeing all these guys create, and it's interesting to me that Lowry's minutes are so low just because they're preserving him, because he's burned out in the regular season. It's just in his nature. He's going to take charges up 40 against, like, Philly or something like that. He just plays hard all the time. So if they can get him to the playoffs healthy, if they can establish the ball movement and not fall back into those bad habits against better teams, because I think we've seen a little bit of that this year. But as you said, that's all part of the process and working out those kinks to develop good habits for the playoffs.
I agree, and I don't think there's a harm in actually resting Kyle Lowry a little more right now, too. I mean, you try telling Lowry he's got to sit for the game in Cleveland or the game in Golden State. It's probably a fight you're going to lose, but, you know, like, I don't know what you gain from even winning these games right now other than your own swagger. You know, look, this is such a long – there's still half a season left to go here. You know, one or two games right now isn't going to help change anything in the playoffs, especially if you're exhausted. And so this injury may be a blessing in disguise. I know – the perception if Toronto loses those two games and has a bad month is, oh, are they back? And I said that earlier, but if that's because Kyle Lowry is out, if he comes back healthy, like, I'm kind of down for that version of the Raptors with a healthy Kyle Lowry than winning these games now and having him be burnt out in the playoffs.
Yeah, trust us. We're Cavs fans. We know all about not caring about the regular season. And if you're healthy and you show up for the playoffs, people forget that. Because every single year, we're going into that beautiful January and February time where people are like, oh, we've never seen the Cavs struggle before like this. Is this the year it all falls apart? Can they even make it out of the first round? It's... If you're healthy and you make it to the playoffs and you show up strong, which I really do believe Toronto is in a position to have a good playoff run, as long as they end up in the right side of the bracket, I think a lot of the blips in the regular season will be forgotten, especially when people are, or in general, or outside fans are already at that point where it's, I don't care what they do in the regular season anyway. Like, they can get their January jokes off, but if they show up, that might actually help change how people view this team.
Yeah, I think with this team, like, this will probably be the year where, you know, we just made fun of people for always doing the, oh, we've never seen the Cavs this bad. But, you know, the narrative we've also seen a lot of is maybe these Raptors are different. So I do. And but this That's is fair. Kind of the first time I bought into it. And that I have kind of thought, OK, maybe these guys do have something here. So I do think if it is ugly again, the backlash will be enormous and could have actual real implications for the franchise's direction going forward. Because if it's this pretty and this well played all regular season and there's a flame out at the end, mm-hmm. I mean, at this, some point you just have to say this core is not going to get it done. I did have a question, though, and I'm just looking at the standings right now, and I am seeing a lot of teams in the East that are pretty good. And
when did Miami get to fourth?
Yeah, that's crazy.
I don't know. That's surprising.
They've won five in a row.
Yeah, I saw the record. I'm like, how did they get there?
I never look at the...
five in a row while being outscored by 1.2 points.
This is really a testament to just how much tunnel vision I have. I look at, like, the top three. So, like, Cleveland, Toronto, Boston to see, like, how far teams are back of Boston. And then I go down to the bottom to see where the Nets are at. I have completely missed Miami going that high up.
Yeah, to that end, I mean, I think it's probably fair to expect Miami to cool back down, and
probably,
even if they make the playoffs, be in the lower half of the bracket. So I just kind of want you guys both, as you know, both of all three of us are, you know, rooting or following teams that will be in the top half of the bracket. If you're looking at Miami, Milwaukee, Detroit, Indiana, and Philly, who is the team? Rank the teams in order of your fear of them in a first round series.
Basil, go ahead.
Hmm. Okay, I'll go. So Washington, Miami, Detroit, Indiana, Philly.
Not okay, Washington. So I'm just assuming Washington's going to get up to four.
Okay, so Miami, Detroit, Indiana, Philadelphia. Wow. God.
Or Milwaukee.
Milwaukee. Oh yeah. So I think Milwaukee is my biggest fear. Because mm-hmm. we saw what they did against the Raptors last year. I'm like weirdly captivated by this Indiana team. They're like very hardworking, and I don't know if the Raptors like that. so I'm scared of that. I'm not scared of Philadelphia. I'm not scared of Detroit. But for the Embiid factor, I'll put Philly above Detroit and put Detroit in fourth on that list. Philadelphia again. You know, you gotta crawl before you walk. So. Could be a nice, comfortable playoff series for Toronto if they get a bunch of young guys there. But and same with Detroit. I honestly don't know one thing about this Pistons team. So
I don't think you should. Legally, you're not cool. Required to as an NBA fan.
They're literally the average basketball, like 21-18, you know, 101.9 they scored, 101.9 they give up, a difference of zero. So my difference is indifference. I don't care about that.
And then you're putting Miami dead last in terms of your fear, because I'm on board with that.
Yeah,
that
me
team
too.
Is.
Yeah,
that team is a corpse. They're six games over 500, and they're a corpse.
Yeah, tonight loss is, you know, like a projected L for the Raptors after losing Lowry, playing back to back, three on the road, got Cleveland, Golden State coming up. I'm not going to put too much into a loss against Miami there, but yeah, again, like,
yeah.
Win five now, sure, but what are you going to do in April? I don't trust you.
Especially when their hero, Dion Waiters, got his contract and went from heat culture to eat culture.
Heat culture, baby, let's go, yeah.
Waiters Island is actually just a buffet.
Yeah. There is nothing I want more than to stick it to the Riley Heat. And, like, there's no animosity. I just love kind of grinding them into the ground.
For me.
Yeah, no kidding. There's some animosity.
Justin, how would you rank those teams, those five?
Yeah, the Bucks scare the hell out of me because they are long and they capitalize on mistakes. And the Cavs are very, very, very willing to make mistakes. After that, I guess Detroit kind of freaks me out only because in past playoff series, they are really physical, and I just kind of worry about getting banged up against them. Indiana doesn't bother me too much. So maybe I should actually answer your question with a ranking. So Bucks are the team I probably fear the most. After that, Indiana, Detroit, I guess we'll throw Philly in there, and then Miami would be the team I fear the least.
I'm stunned by how low you both had Philly. Just because I think the reason you want to put Milwaukee so high is just Giannis. It's just the fact that no matter what happens, there's a world for both, and maybe I'm crazy here, but there's a world in which Giannis is the best player in a series against the Cavs.
He can definitely be the best player for a series, but there's
over
also...
Over the course of a series, not overall is what I mean.
But there's also Chris possibly better than DeRozan Middleton. shout out to Ben Golliver. Bledsoe's there. I don't know. They got a lot of length. It's not just Giannis.
They're scary, but I think Giannis is the scariest. Is the differentiator between this and all those other teams, but... I don't see how Embiid doesn't represent the same anxiety.
Yeah, but is
Embiid
he making it to the playoffs? Like, I just don't believe that he can make it full season.
If he's hurt for the year, then they won't even make the playoffs. But assuming the status quo just for this year, I think they should be higher. I did think it's really funny, Faisal, that you had Indiana as high as you did. And I think it's entirely justified because they are exactly the kind of team that will take the Raptors to seven out of sheer trustworthiness.
It's such a weird Pacers team, and they've been much better than ever expected, which is, good for them. But I don't know. All those teams are kind of indifferent to me. All those teams are indifferent. The Raptors should lose to none of those teams. The Cavs should obviously not lose to any of those teams. And so all that means is the Raptors are going to have to go to seven with one of them. I know how this plays out now. But it shouldn't be that way. They should be comfortably beating all five of those teams. But something scares me, obviously, about Indiana. I don't know what it is.
Is Philly disappointing this year?
Yeah.
They're 19-19. Their over under, I think, was 43.5.
They're about exactly where I thought they'd be.
Underperforming, but something just doesn't feel as good as it should be there.
Yeah, Embiid again. The Embiid health thing is the biggest thing. They're still mitigating his minutes. He's not playing all the time. He's missed a few games. Markel Fultz has obviously done nothing. So, I don't know. I guess, in theory, it's probably disappointing. A lot of people just had them higher and expect them to be this, not world beater per se, but be on the threshold of being the next great team in the East. But, we do this in sports all the time. We raise expectations to a point where they're kind of unmanageable and unsustainable. And with the Philly team, it reeks of doing that, right? It reeks of just...
Yeah,
giving them the keys and assuming they're gonna be able to handle the car, but no, not yet. Right, this is a very rite of passage league. It really is, and you got to earn your mark before you start being given this praise. And Philly, for all the talent they have, they're still probably a couple years away from being where they need to be.
Yeah, we usually come in a year early on the team. I'd almost say that they'd overachieve because I'm high on Markel Fultz, and I still think he's going to be very good. When he gets healthy, assuming he does. But if you would have told me he would have missed this much time and would have been a non-factor when he played, I wouldn't have thought that they'd get to this point because they're exactly where I thought they'd be, like a 500 team that maybe makes a couple of runs throughout the season but ultimately either gets the eighth seed or falls just short. And so far, they're on track for that. So I think... they're a better team than I would have expected. Their young guys are playing well. Obviously, Joel Embiid, when he's healthy and he's in the lineup, is just he's a franchise changer. He's just this absolutely incredible talent that makes them scary. But when you're talking about them getting into the playoffs and a potential matchup against them, I just have to kind of wonder what shape they're going to be in. They don't really have a lot of experience. There's just so many factors going against them that it's not a team that I worry too much about in a playoff series.
Yeah, I think they probably are a year away. I just think it's the narrative around them is really interesting. I mean, Embiid is on schedule to play about 66 games, which I think that's about what people optimistically were hoping for, but they were 15-19 before rattling off four wins in a row. This team's got some weird juju from time to time, and you know, I don't know. I just think that we've kind of forgotten about them. We kind of like left them in the background, like we just assumed they were a good East team, and then oh wait, they're not that good. But no one seemed to really be talking about it. And I wonder. I mean, I don't really think that's the kind of team you want to play in a 1-8 matchup. I mean, how is Al Horford gonna do against Embiid?
Now that would be funny. Like, I think all we want is just a really funny first round matchup for Boston. But
that would be. I mean, that's the dream. That's the dream. That's the dream. It would be so funny if they got after a year of Boston Carr appearances on the Herd. After a year of those appearances on the Herd of him just saying that the Celtics are, you know, would be favored right now against the Cavs, it's just like if they get even taken to six in the first round as a one seed, I will. Oh, the Schadenfreude will be real.
Oh, it'd be so great. But Faisal, we really do appreciate your time coming on the podcast. Want to give you the opportunity to plug what you got going on. You always have a lot of great causes. You're such an inspirational person. For those of you that don't know, just let people know what you got going on, and if there's anything at the moment, any drives or causes that you're supporting.
I mean, no toy drive just yet. We're a couple months away. We're working on some things for this year's cause. Last year's was great, and I appreciate all the support. We're going to do something big this year. So no details finalized yet, but other than that, just doing my TV thing up in Canada. If you're listening from there, you know, you can catch me on Sportsnet literally all the time.
That's true.
I'm always on doing something. And so, that's kind of it right now. So slow start to 2018, but we're going to pick it up for sure.
Nice. And Jade, as you're editing this, you got to get Trey to reach out to Faisal. You got to come on the Nice Kicks podcast because you got yourself a collection. And I'm sure those guys those guys would absolutely love to have you on. As we're talking about causes as well, I want to give a shout out to Tom Haberstroh, who is doing the ALS Pepper Challenge. If you don't know what's going on, go to his Twitter feed or almost anybody's feed, because that thing is spreading like wildfire. It's a great, great cause. Make sure that you donate. Go check that out. I want to thank all our listeners. Faisal, once again, thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it. While Thursday's
for all the defibrillator talk.
Yes.
That's why people come on our pods.
Come for the Boston slander, stay for the defibrillator talk. So thanks to all our listeners. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe. And until next time, go Cavs. We'll be right back.